Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And so tonight, we are specifically only going to talk about UFC Fight Night 113 in Glasgow. Because that is clearly... No?
Okay. That's all people have been talking
that
about.
That is all anyone wants to talk about is the return of Gunnar Nelson.
We are no longer your MMA show. We are your boxing show because we're taking over the world of boxing along with Conor McGregor, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God. We've got a huge event. What, a week or two from Saturday? We've got like the biggest UFC event of the year, and it's barely a blip on the radar at this point. This is insanity that's been happening this past week.
And all jokes aside, I don't know that I have seen a single story or tweet about UFC Fight Night, which is Sunday night. Not a single...
I thought you made up the fight night. I thought you just made up that fight night just to, for the sake of a joke. It's in Glasgow?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, no cross-promotion whatsoever from London earlier today.
No, none at all. And
I guess not that I'd expected on that card.
No.
Like, but in between the yeahs, in between, like, Floyd going, yeah! We couldn't work in, like...
UFC's in Glasgow on Sunday.
By the way, everyone.
Kept up the mic.
UFC's in Glasgow.
You guys want to go? You excited about that?
It's probably because the Showtime mic won't let them do that, right?
Oh, man. This was insanity all week long. Here's the thing. I saw a great tweet about this, and I wish I could credit the person, but it's just been insane for four straight days. It was like when you get pissed off about spending your $100 on this, don't forget you're paying for this week's entertainment too, so you got more than your value, which I 100% agree with. After the first day, I was all in. If they wanted to charge me pay-per-view dollars to watch these things, I would have paid to watch these all week, Eric.
Yes. Well, and you and I went back and forth a little bit last night because clearly round three didn't work for either fighter.
Yes, but that's almost exactly what you'd expect, especially the way MMA rounds go in an MMA fight, where the guys go back and forth the first couple rounds, and then they kind of have to reset, so they kind of just kind of go through the motions in the third round, and then we saw a big fourth round. I don't know if I'd call it a knockout, but I mean it was certainly a big round for Conor McGregor. If for those of you who haven't seen London yet, it's online. It was at a slightly weird time just because of the time difference,
right?
You know, overall, yeah, Brooklyn had problems. Brooklyn had mic problems. Brooklyn had issues where the guys couldn't hear each other, so they weren't responding to each other. The crowd couldn't quite hear the guy, so there was a lot going on in Brooklyn. But, I mean, come on. For a week where these guys had to go out every night and basically entertain without a script, I think they both pulled it off pretty well. I mean, that's a big ask. I saw Luke Thomas talk about this. Entertainers who go out and do this, they don't have this kind of pressure. Musicians, they go out and sing the same songs every night. Comedians go town to town. What do? They do the same set every night because they're not watching sets online. The audience isn't. They're not seeing what's been done the night before, so they can do the same thing. Basically, these guys had to come up with it on the fly for four straight nights, and I think they more than delivered, and boy, oh boy, they have separated so many people, including myself, from their money coming up on August 26th.
Yeah, they've done a masterful job at creating not marketing out of nothing, but I mean the hyperbole on the first day, I think some people just didn't know what they were going to expect. But I can tell you, in our 8.5 years of doing this show, our 25-year friendship that was in and around boxing and combat sports, cheers to you, my friend, I have never in my life seen anything like this. I mean, there are people that don't even know what a boxing glove looks like that are asking me how they can download this to watch it.
Well, I mean, how long have we been doing this show?
8.5 years.
So we've been doing this show a long time. Well, you and I both watch MMA much longer than that and kind of fell into this thing. So that being said, I've been a big MMA fan for the better part of, well, I've been a big MMA fan probably since 94.
Sure.
But really into it, watching almost every event anytime I can, probably the last 20 years or so. And my wife has had a passing tolerance of this at this point. And I sent you a text the other night. I was watching Conor's clips. Again, I had already seen the thing.
Sure.
I'd seen it earlier in the day. I want to watch this again. I want to see it. The Toronto one. Well done, Canada, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Those crowds, wrestling, combat sports, MMA, they always pay out big. So I was watching some clips of Toronto, and my wife looks at me and she goes, "So when is that fight again?" I could tell you not once in all the years of all this insanity has she cared once when a fight was. I'll turn the fights on in the living room when I watch them, and she might glance at them. But, I mean, at this point, she's like, are they doing this every night? They just go out there and they scream at each other? When are they actually going to fight? And that's kind of what everybody's doing right now. Everybody's going, when are they actually going to fight? When's it going to happen? And they've built up this appetite that, again, like you said, is unseen. Remember how huge Mayweather-Pacquiao was. Even casual fans, people who didn't watch boxing, a lot of MMA fans who didn't really watch boxing, they wanted to see this fight. Let's multiply that by 10 at this point. And that's what we've got here. And that's insane when you think about it, as Conor McGregor's going in there as somebody who's never boxed a professional round in his life. He's going against a guy who's been boxing probably longer than... Happy birthday, by the way. Conor McGregor has been alive. That's insanity at this point. And Conor's right. He's the biggest thing in boxing, because you can talk about A side and B side and Brendan Schaub, and that other dude can yell on all the Showtime pre-shows about who's what and what's where. There's nobody else. Brendan Schaub made a great point. He pointed at the crowd. He goes, who else does this fighting Floyd Mayweather? The answer is nobody. The answer is no. It's not Canelo, who I love. It's not Berto, clearly, because nobody bought that fight. I mean, there's a couple boxers I know in passing. Nobody does what Conor does, though, when it comes to him fighting in a boxing ring. And, I mean, I was thinking a little bit about it this week. I mean, I don't have too many tears for millionaires, multimillionaires, that is. But you've really got to feel a little bit for Oscar De La Hoya. He's got the fight everybody wants. He's got Golovkin. He's got Canelo. He's got two great fighters in damn near the prime of their careers actually fighting each other, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody cares. Everybody wants the circus. Everybody wants what's happening this week, and that's a function of the audience, and that's also a function of the worth of both of these guys that are going to go in there and box on August 26th.
And what I said to you after Toronto, I texted you and I said, Ken, I got a weird feeling about this. I walked away from that press conference and I thought to myself, this thing is just so weird that I'm starting to lean into my intuition that we're going to see something special on August 26th. Now, I'm not saying Conor's going to win this thing. What I'm saying to you is...
But by the way, you did say Conor's going to win this thing. And you sent me a link to buy my 49-in-1 t-shirt.
So I did do that. I did do both of those things.
You're hedging a bit. I'm
hedging a bit because I want to set this up properly. There's something about him and his... And I know we've been talking about this for weeks,
Conor.
But Conor. When you watch Toronto specifically, which to me was the highlight of the whole thing, there's something about him... And his ability, as you said, to kind of gather a crowd, but more importantly, his ability to just will this stuff into existence as if he is actually Houdini, right? He just manifests this thing and it shows up. And I've been thinking a lot, and when I texted you after Toronto, I've been thinking about this. So if we watch and we'll play MMA math for a second. We watch the Nate Diaz fight, and I know these aren't apples to apples comparison, but I just want to make a point. We watch the Nate Diaz fight. He gets choked out in the Nate Diaz fight. Within 2.5 months has fixed all the holes seemingly in that game, and it's a completely different fight. What does that look like if this guy now can do that in real time in a 12-round fight?
Well, not just a 12-round fight, but talk about that adjustment. Think about Tuesday to Wednesday.
100%.
Think about LA to Toronto. And once Mayweather had his... basically first round of dominance, because he knew the format and he knew what was going to happen and all of those things played into his hands, Conor came back, and you know what everybody said was, that's a 10-8 round. We all scored it. We started scoring rounds, and a lot of people said, hey, Floyd came out. I was surprised on Monday. He did so well. That was a 10-9 for Floyd. Good for him. Conor came back with a 10-8 round. So what you want to do in a ridiculous way, but not too ridiculous when it comes to Conor McGregor, is actually extrapolate that to a boxing match. Can he actually make those adjustments and figure things out that quickly? I mean, if Conor's smart, and I don't know how he's training, but he goes in and he has a couple boxing matches, and you don't do it too close to the fight, obviously, but you go have some boxing matches and you let those guys that are in there teach you the things that you didn't even think of. And then you make those adjustments. And can he make those adjustments? And that's the thing everybody's wondering. Can he do that before Floyd now has got a lot of pressure on him, too. Because, obviously, there's not a lot to gain for Floyd Mayweather in this fight. He's almost pressed it to the point where Floyd's got to knock him out, though. And a lot of guys have said that. Or else Floyd's going to be seen as a fraud. Floyd walks out of there with a 12-round decision. Nobody respects that. Everybody's going to be talking about the fact that Conor stood toe-to-toe for 12 rounds with the quote-unquote best pound-for-pound boxer in history.
Yes, but let me ask after this, respond and after this week, a different take on that, right? You and I have been talking about that. Chael Sonnen has said, look, if he doesn't get knocked out in the first minute and a half, this is a loss for boxing, so forth and so on. But in the same respects that we have marveled, I guess, at Conor's ability to adapt on the fly with all four of these press conferences, right? He knew that last night didn't go so well and made adjustments this tonight to make sure that
in London
was better than Brooklyn because Brooklyn didn't work. So in that same vein, Mayweather, in my mind, you know, will be able to spin this if he loses to say that he didn't lose to a boxer. Right. Like he didn't beat the record totally, but he can walk away from this in the same way that Conor, if he loses a decision.
Can he, though?
Yes.
Can he, though?
Well,
I mean, Floyd's been working on bluster for the better part of 15 years. You can't just walk.
You're
away
a
from
wrestling
bluster.
Fan. That is what they do. That's
right. That's entirely what they do. But I really think I think you saw it not as much with Floyd, because if you watch some of the Toronto after
this is
fight
what
or after press
this is what I'm saying where you're going
Floyd was totally fine, like, and that's the day you would have been, oh man, I can't believe it, I wonder if Floyd's going to freak out and go off on stage. That all said, for his audience, for the easy work crowd, for the meated juice heads on the side. And all of those people and the girl with the cell phone the whole time, for those people, the entire facade crumbles for his actual fan base. That all crumbles. And I don't think you can back down from that. And there's a lot to be said. How much is his actual fan base and how many of us have been watching for him to lose for years at this point? I don't know.
All of us. Right.
Exactly. And well, I mean, yeah. You know, what's funny is Eric and I, we've worked in Grand Rapids in media for a long time. Ostensibly, we should be on board. I mean, the guy's got a great story from where he came from and his father going to prison and all that he's been able to do in his life. He's got a great story. But the problem, it's not a problem. He's made millions and millions of dollars on this. The thing is that he's been able to play up this heel persona to the point that you and I are kind of looking at him like, man, I don't know. You think Ortiz has got him this time? I don't know. Maybe. What about Pacquiao? Does he have a chance? I don't know. Let's watch and see. And that's kind of where we've gotten. The interesting thing is Conor McGregor, like you said earlier, has been able to just vocalize this in a way that no other opponent of his has. And to do it in these gigantic press conferences, in arenas. And a lot of people are saying, oh, this is old hat to Floyd. And I know Floyd's done tours before. You and I have been at some of those tours. Everybody sits down. We're drained because, I mean, where we were sitting in the sun for 3 hours.
Sure.
Because everybody was late. And we were at the Canelo Mayweather presser, I believe, most recently.
Yep.
There was nothing going on there. And you could tell from Monday to, Tuesday to today, how the boxing guys had to adjust. But every World Tour stop was just like Monday, where everybody was droning on and everybody wanted to read their little script and talk about Showtime and the biggest pay-per-views in history and all of those things. And this guy and this guy and that guy and this guy. And they just were yammering on and on and on. And it was amazing to me. I literally laughed out loud in my living room when Dana took the mic and just did an intro. Like, nobody's here to see this shit. They want to see these fighters. That's what they want. They don't want intros from everybody for a half an hour. And you guys read. Number there's 20 freaking thousand people out there. They're not here to so we can read numbers and thank great sponsors over the past 20. Shut up and let's let these fighters get to the microphone and say what they're going to say. So you saw a really interesting dynamic thing happen with this whole press conference setup too, because every time it seemed like we had something a little new, something different, something slightly like today. If you didn't see London yet, they actually did post-fight Q&As. So that was a kind of an interesting thing to see in boxing, because you never actually see that in boxing. I don't think it was done properly, and it was at the end of the spiels and all that stuff, so it didn't quite click. But, I mean, it was kind of interesting to see these guys try to adjust on the fly, and poor Steven Espinoza just get railed at every single turn, and which I don't mind at all because the guy had shit audio on Tuesday, and as an audio guy, it was driving me insane. So you know what? Get your stuff together. Bring a couple of those UFC quote-unquote amateurs in to run your show, and maybe we'll be able to hear some guys talk.
Yeah, well, and to go back to Wednesday night after Toronto, when Floyd comes essentially up to the broadcast team, we'll call it, that was why when I texted you, actually, because it felt to me, you know, he's sitting up there and he's looking at Brendan Schaub and he's talking about Brendan Schaub's career and how Brendan Schaub loves the industry and is into the fight game. And, you know, he turns to Pauly and says the same thing. And Pauly tries to apologize for helping Conor spar. And Mayweather's like, no, man, business is business. We all do. Right. And he's got this Cheshire cat grin because he knows he's making $1 trillion off this thing, which is where I just maybe I've bought into this insanity. But it seems to me that he's so into just the spectacle and what they've created that to him, at least outwardly facing, the fight seems like it's a secondary thing.
Well, here's what I saw. And you know, I'll extrapolate my little tiny bit of experience in a certain world to what happened. Did you just spill your beer?
No, God, no.
What happened there?
Nothing. I just sat down. It's right there.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. So here I'm going to extrapolate my little tiny bit of experience to what I thought I saw a little bit of in Floyd Money Mayweather. And for obviously the last 6 years of my career, I've been hosting a morning show up until recently. And it was interesting during those times I had a couple different people where I would do the show with. And, you know, I was always one of those guys that had to carry the load for the most part. And then the past couple of years, I had a partner where I didn't necessarily feel like I had to keep shouldering the burden as much. Like sometimes I could hand things off on the air. I could go, okay, you're going to take care of this. I trust your talent. I know what you're doing. Boom, here you go. And I just, oh, cool. That's awesome. You can carry some of this. This is the first time in Floyd Money Mayweather's life, as far as promoting fights and everything he does, where he can go, oh, cool, man. You go do you. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to cash checks. That's what I saw on Wednesday night after Toronto. I saw Money Mayweather go, awesome, cool. You do what you do. You do it all day. I don't care what you call me. I don't care if people call you racist. I don't care about any of this. You are helping me shoulder this load that I've had to carry for years and years and years in my career. I had to buy myself out of a top rank contract. I had to do all of these things over and over and over and over again. And now he's got a guy across the table who's handing him the money, literally handing him the money by doing the work for him. That was relief that I saw when he sat down after Toronto and talked to those guys.
I can buy that. I think showing that relief after that seemed to me, as somebody who's, you know, we've been in the business a long time, to me seemed a little bit like you were showing behind the curtain a little bit too quickly, right? Like,
I totally agree, and I agree 100%. But what I took away from that is like, oh man, he should save this a little bit, you know. Don't start talking about the wolf tickets yet,
right? Right. Don't go straight wolf. Never go straight wolf tickets on day two.
Not before the fight. You don't talk about the wolf tickets before the fight. That's where Floyd hasn't caught up to Conor yet.
So, yeah. And then we seemingly go dark till August 26th, right? Because they're not doing anything between now and then. This is it.
Well, no. They both get their camps in. Obviously,
well,
Floyd
right.
was...
Yes, they're going to train.
Well, right. I'm talking about the whole dynamic here. Let me finish my thought.
Okay.
Conor obviously gets he gets to go back to Ireland, which is where I think he's doing most of his training. So he caught that quote unquote break on the end of the leg to be in the UK. You know, Floyd's going to go back. Floyd's been selling this as, oh man, I can't do this training camp again, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's giving us every reason to buy the fight.
Yep.
And I get it if you don't want to buy the fight. That's
I don't.
100%.
I actually don't get it.
Yeah.
I really like
who doesn't want to buy the fight.
And here's why. I honestly think that if you're what we do, obviously all of the people in our ecosystem are going to buy this thing because they're in and around the journalistic, you know, we'll use it in air quotes, world, and they want to see this thing. I think if you're interested in fighting, in combat sports, in marketing, in promotions, in general circus like atmospheres, there won't be a bigger thing this year, including the Super Bowl.
I don't know if there'll be a bigger thing this year in general.
This is what I'm saying. So I don't. So like you can. I'm going to call you a liar, but you can say I'm never going to buy this fight, and I'm going to say bullshit. You're going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings or a movie theater or a friend's house.
You're going to get to a friend's house. You're going to get somewhere.
People are, you know, when my mother and, you know, your wife and people who have never had a casual interest in any of the stuff we've been into for 25 years are all of a sudden like, hey, what is this thing going on my computer right now? You know that everybody is going to want to catch this in some way, shape, or form. So you can say what you want, Ken. I don't buy it that you, in the royal sense of the you, aren't going to buy it in the same way that you aren't going to watch Game of Thrones on Sunday. I don't buy it.
Well, I mean, the guy was wearing a polar bear jacket, for Christ's sake. I mean, you don't see that every
right.
day.
Where do you get that stuff unless you're at Game of Thrones, right?
You go kill a polar bear.
Yeah, clearly.
Apparently.
In training.
I mean, Iceland's pretty close to Ireland,
yes.
right?
Yes, and that's where all the polar bears are.
It's only a letter off, yeah. according to Google Maps.
That is how the Atlas works, is that things are in alphabetical order across the planet.
So do you have Connor within four rounds, as he called it?
I'll take it all day.
You'll take it. You did. You sent me that 49 and one.
All day. Boy, I will take that all day.
Eric's all in. Not only did you send it, I mean, you went and found it first from Barstool Sports, for Christ's sake.
Well,
and those guys are terrible. Have you ever heard that radio show? They are terrible. Have you heard that show?
Have you heard this show? Look,
I know. I've heard this show, and that's how I can judge how terrible that show is.
Okay.
Look, I get it. They've got a lot more listeners, and they're on XM, and dooper-doo, we were on XM for 10 minutes, too, once. That show is damn terrible. I can't believe how bad that show is. It's so bad. I'm just saying. What are you trying to get us on Barstool, and you didn't tell me? Because
no,
you're, like,
not,
being really quiet
not at all.
Now.
I was totally just going to go this part of the broadcast brought to you by Barstool Sports.
God damn it, man. We were so close to being the lead into Busted Open. And you screwed up the deal.
Look, I'm just saying, I pay for that radio and they're terrible. You have to be better than free radio if you're terrible. That should be the minimum qualification, for Christ's sake.
Just amazed that you're paying for radio. That's really, you're burying the lead there.
They'll give it to you for like $3 a month just do it right. Like you order it for a month. And again, I clearly have no interest in SiriusXM stock. You do the free trial, and then they'll just throw it at you because, like, they need subscribers. Because apparently there's still commercials, even though you're paying for
yep.
it.
Yep, there is.
My experience in the world of pay radio at this point.
Absolutely. So we will obviously cover anything else that comes
out. Meet me at the Ken Evans Barstool Radio guys.
Yes.
I feel like those guys, you want to talk about Dana White being like one of those people that's really paying way too much attention for what his title is. I feel like those dudes are going to get totally pissed off. Like this little tiny podcast that barely gets 1,000 downloads sometimes. Like somebody's going to go, oh, they're talking about you, Barstool guys.
Oh, yeah, so we're in a Twitter war that we don't know about right now, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. We probably already are. Which is fine. I don't care.
All right. So the other things that we obviously have to talk about, and we will talk about it in, I think, in the order of importance, and that is I really do want to talk about UFC 214 because I know I said this on the Facebook page and my Facebook page and Twitter and anywhere else that I could. I don't think, and I don't know who made it, I don't think there's been a better promo than the UFC 214 Tame Your Demons promo.
No, but I mean, let's think about all the years of law breaking that went into that promo. That's a lot of legwork that you don't have with a lot of other fighters, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, but the story that comes out of that, I think...
So many Twitter appearances went into that promo. Like, Rampage Jackson looks at that promo and is like, damn, son, what you doing?
I actually saw somebody on my Facebook wall who actually wrote out how many things he was like...
That's what I'm saying.
It was like a paragraph and a half.
It's you know, it's a great promo.
It's fantastic.
That's years of legwork going into that promo there.
You think, before we talk about UFC 213, the reason I brought up the promo, though, is because I genuinely want to get your take. Does this make it to July 29th, these two guys?
These two guys. Which guy? I mean, I guess we could always, you know, depends on whether or not somebody.
And this is, again, this is not the same. This is not the same thing. But somehow McDessie and Sage Northcutt hurt themselves training for the same fight, and they're both out of their fight coming up in a month.
Yeah, but
so,
I mean,
not an apples to apples comparison. I get it.
I think we'll probably talk about Amanda Nunes in a little bit.
We will.
But I can't see anything other than an actual test or something from a commission that would keep John out of this fight at this point. I mean, if you're John Jones, you have to fight. I don't care what you do in camp. I don't care what you tweak, what sprains, barring a break or something clear as day that a doctor won't clear you for, I think John Jones has to make this fight.
If he doesn't, is it over?
It's damn near close. It's damn near close. And especially at this point, because there's such a weight on this card at this point, especially what we saw after the bottom falling out of the last card, 213, especially after what happened when last year at 200, John Jones fell out. I mean, there's just so many things. And there's a certain amount of responsibility you have at that point of the card. And I think with John Jones, there's so much responsibility at this point on the top of this card. And even in the sense of a UFC year where we can't talk about anything we really remembered. We're talking about Conor McGregor and boxing press conferences and Bellator fights as the most interesting thing that's happened this year. And I get it. They're having a pretty good year and they've got the IMG Warner deal all going, but it's been a pretty unforgettable year, if you want to be honest, with UFC. That can change on this card, but John's got to get there. And will John get there is still a question that's rightfully asked when it comes to this situation. Daniel Cormier, I mean, look, we joked about it in the fight with Rumble, but I mean, I think you have to ask, as a guy gets older, and he clearly had some trouble cutting weight in the last fight, as a professional and as a champion and as a wrestler who should really know how to do this really, really well, you have to wonder, whoa, that should be still a little bit of a red flag. Like, we're not sure. I mean, Daniel could not make weight. He came so dangerously close last time.
Well, I think if we're being honest, he probably didn't make weight.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, whatever reasoning you want to look at in this situation, you've got some things on this card that are going, I'm not so sure. Let's see what happens. But like I've told you on Twitter, at least they've got light heavyweights like fleshing out the card to maybe swap in for one of two of the guys. So let's keep one of them and we can swap out a guy, right?
Yeah, well, and they're clearly getting smarter. But what's interesting, to segue back to UFC 213, is this will mark the third year in a row that the main event of International Fight Week didn't come to fruition.
Yes, and not only that, but it didn't come to fruition and there was nothing to quote-unquote save it. Let's be honest.
I mean, and the original card, I think, was fire, and then it was not, and then you missed your main event, and then it was like you were on Twitter saying, $69? Really, guys? That's a thing?
And I get it. And some people on Twitter were asking me about it. They should cut the price. Why don't they just do a quick cut, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing, guys. They can't cut the price. I'm sure... I would 100% say Dana White unilaterally, if he could have, would have went on the Fight Pass app and said, guys, $19.95, here you go. Take this as it is. Problem is, cable satellite providers, in their contracts, there's a certain price point. And that's happened because of things like the WWE Network. And if you notice, you can't buy WWE pay-per-views anymore in nearly every big cable or satellite provider. That's because they've got a network now that runs pay-per-views and everything else for $9.99 a month. Part of the contract is, hey, you can't undercut us. So UFC couldn't the day of decide, hey, this is going to be $20, even though they probably knew that was the right thing. And you and I probably would have, okay, I'll spend $20 to see if Yoel Romero can win or not. And it turns out he can't, which was very interesting to me.
Yes.
But they can't do anything about the price when it's so far along. I mean, we've seen them before turn pay-per-views into spike cards. I forget which spike card that was, but they've done that before. But that obviously wasn't 12 hours before the fight was supposed to happen.
No.
So that's the reason why you couldn't drop the price day of for a pay-per-view that's going to run on cable and satellite providers.
So let's talk about, I mean, we won't talk about Aldo. We obviously don't need to talk about Jones and Cormier because everyone should be caught up with that stuff. But what I do want to ask about is what Chael was talking about, this idea that it's you don't make weight, it's a forfeit. Are you down with that? Like, when we're talking about Amanda and her sinusitis, or however you pronounce it, her problem with her sinuses, Are we buying this thing? Because what I thought was interesting, two things were interesting. One, I'm still at this point, regardless of the week that he has had as an individual, I'm still at this point trying to wonder what's the upside of Dana White throwing his champion under the bus, you know, and saying she was medically cleared. Don't know what happened. WTF, mate. Oh, by the way, have I mentioned I hate Demetrius Johnson? Just want to throw that in there. Have a great night, everyone.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing probably with Dana White, and I mentioned this on a couple of podcasts, I think we're probably just seeing the point where Dana White is just getting wore out. There's a corporate structure now behind him. He's got a lot on his plate. He's been dealing with, obviously, the McGregor-Mayweather stuff. He's putting these cards together, and they fall apart. And I think we've always appreciated the raw Dana White for being a guy that'll tell it like it is. I think you take the good with the bad in that case. And the bad in that case is a guy who's going to go, I don't know, she was cleared by a doctor. I don't know why she didn't get in the ring. I don't know why the hell she didn't get in the octagon. I think you're going to see some of that. And again, it's tough in this situation. And I can only speak, again, I'll extrapolate my tiny little experience to what's happening in this case. I worked for you for years, Eric. The
you
few
did.
Times I missed work, it was sinusitis. It's an inflammation, and it's this weird headache, and I can't imagine getting punched in the head if that's the case. I, though, as somebody who suffered from it, wonder, how do you get all the way to the weight cut, the way in, and then the next day without that thing flaring up? Because you're losing fluids the whole week of your weight cut, and we're hearing more and more she had a tough weight cut, and she knew this was happening. So I feel like this was all happening. The weight cut really just pushed it over the edge. Because you don't want to get punched if you're like this, if you're just a mess in the head. I mean, your equilibrium's off. You've got headaches that are near migraines. That's a lot going on to get punched in the head. But as I talked about responsibility in headline fights a little bit with John Jones, and obviously talking about the weight that Floyd Mayweather had to carry all these years, I do think there's a sense of responsibility if you're the headlining fight on the card. And I get it. These fighters are out for themselves. They need to make sure that they're paying attention to their bodies and doing what's best for them. But I do think at the point that you're carrying the card, which Amanda Nunes was, she was trusted basically as the first woman since Ronda Rousey. Let's not play around. Last year's fight was Brock Lesnar headlining the card. They changed it at the end to call it Nunes Tate. But that was Brock Lesnar selling that card.
100%.
This card
yes.
had been built to the point where, okay, you know what? We're going to give you the shot, Amanda. Ronda Rousey's last lady that's had this shot to really carry a pay-per-view. Here's your shot. You weighed in, and you didn't make it to the fight? Tough pill to swallow. Very tough pill to swallow. I don't know about forfeits at this point. I like the idea. The problem is consistency. Who forfeits and when do they forfeit? And you, I mean, obviously, you like the idea of a set hard rule. But then again, you look at, you know, in this country, mandatory sentencing, which has turned out to be a terrible thing. But it sounds like a great idea, doesn't it, Eric? Like, if this guy does this crime, he should serve minimum this time. You're removing discretion. And I always think discretion held by people who understand the business or the law or whatever realm you're talking about is a better thing than a hard and fast black and white rule. I would rather let people who know what they're doing have discretion than give them a hard and fast rule where they can't actually make decisions and use their knowledge to that point. So, forfeiture. I don't know. I honestly don't. In this case, do I think she should be forfeited? Probably not, but I certainly don't mind a discussion, and I certainly don't mind trying to figure out here, hey, if a doctor clears you, why aren't you fighting? Should the doctor take these other things into account? Or should you simply forfeit? I think this is one of those issues that starts the ball rolling on a discussion like that.
Well, and that was, like I said earlier, that to me was the most interesting part, is this whole idea of, so the doctor clears you but doesn't clear you for these other things like the sinusitis. And should that be a part of it, and should that be a consideration? All that to be said, when you talk about discretion, you know, what I and why I brought up Dana White earlier is the way in which he currently, the unfiltered Dana in the corporate structure, is going after people. It seems really random and almost completely arbitrary, right? Like, if that was Ronda Rousey, and I know that's a big if that was Ronda Rousey, that would not be the response. It would have been like, my fighter is protecting herself, and she wasn't up for it, and it sucks that she couldn't do it, but whatever, right? Like, he didn't make anywhere near the big deal that he had for, or not even a big deal. Like, he's usually better about protecting the fighters that he seems to want to protect, and it just didn't seem like this was worth protecting.
And I honestly, I'll chalk that 100% up to fatigue and wear and tear, and the fact that the guy's probably being pulled at 20 different ends at this point. I feel like, and especially when the comments happened. Comments essentially happened, I think that was the post-fight presser?
Yes.
So he had just gone through what was going to be a terrible night. He knew the pay-per-view buys at that point were gone, and he knew that his fighter was cleared just about 20 hours ago. So I think you had some frustration and some unfiltered comments that maybe you don't even hear from Dana White a day or two later. I just think that was a culmination, and that's happening more and more often, and that's corporate structure, and that's the pressure of these fights. And you said it, Eric. Nobody told these guys they had to do 60 freaking fight cards a year.
Yeah.
They just decided to go do it. And on top of that, the guy's literally flying across the country this past week, and I'm sure the UFC's making a decent amount of money, but he's promoting an event that's not even theirs at this point. I believe you saw some frustration and some fatigue from Dana White. And, yeah, would he have protected other fighters? I think so. But he decided in this this wasn't his hill to stand on, and he gave it away. Probably too much. You don't necessarily have to do that, but he probably was tired and decided, hey, you know what? She was cleared by doctors. I don't know why she didn't fight. Stop asking me questions.
And that gives us the de facto main event, which ended up being Robert Whittaker, who was on the show talking about his fight with Yoel Romero, who he wins by unanimous decision in 5 rounds a pretty spectacular fight, all things considered. Given how pretty uneventful the card was, a guy to go 5 rounds, and I don't remember if it was you, Ken, on Twitter, but somebody posted his response when Ariel Helwani was asking him, do you feel that you earned that championship? And he's like, dude, I fought a 5-round fight with the scariest man in the organization and lived to tell about it. Yeah, I think I earned this thing.
Well, not only that, the interesting part about Yoel Romero and the whole division at this point, and I love Michael's Bisping, but nobody's giving the guy credit to beat anybody. Nobody's thinking that he's going to be able to defend that belt. So by default, we had already given the title to Yoel Romero. So when Robert Whittaker beats the hell out of him for 5 rounds,
Three rounds, really, right? Like, he gets injured. He gets injured in the first 2, right? That's why,
fair enough.
You know, but yeah,
I meant a 5-round fight.
Correct.
He went in there championship rounds and won the fight against a guy that most people think would just mop the floor. And again, fight's a fight. You can't do MMA math, but most people think he would just mop the floor with Michael Bisping at this point.
I think most people would think that. And what I will say again about Michael Bisping, and I've said this unapologetically for 8 years, I am a huge Michael Bisping fan. And if you don't like it, I get it. But because my wife and I were arguing about this, what he did on Saturday night, I think, is one of the greatest things he's done since he won the title. The fact that he walks up to Whittaker and goes, hey, man, this was an amazing fight, but you wearing a belt makes me sick. Here's mine. I'll come get it in November.
No, that was a lot of fun. How much fun are these European fighters at this point?
They're amazing, right? Like,
again, the guy can't really fight, I don't know, what, till October? Or am I just thinking of GSP who wanted to?
Well, Whittaker now with the knee injury is out for 6 months at this point, pending.
Which I would love if Bisping can come back before that and just keep calling him out for being injured, even though Bisping can make the fight beforehand. Because that would be perfect.
Unless he has to fight Yoel Romero, then I'm not really excited about it. I just think that's a really bad idea.
And that's what's interesting is, like, nobody thinks he has a chance against Yoel, but when Robert Whittaker beat Yoel, or was it, do you think this is legit? Like, shut up. What are we gonna do, guys? We have to decide what we're gonna. I get it, you're pissed that the main event didn't happen and that this was your main event, cool, but you can't necessarily take it out on these fighters.
And no.
which is what I feel like some people were doing in regards to the post fight there after UFC 213.
Well, and in some respects, I can give it to some people who have interim belt atrophy, right? There's been a lot of it. A lot of injuries, a lot of interim belts, a lot of meaningless titles. But to Whitaker's defense, I think his answer kind of sums it up. I mean, this was the de facto number one contendership for the interim title, right? That those are all facts. As you just alluded to, everyone who's been paying attention to the sport thinks that Yoel Romero is the de facto champ at this point. So therefore, if you can get and take his best for 10 minutes and go, all right, that was pretty awful, but I think I got enough in the gas tank to take it to you for 15 more. Yeah, I think we see you as some level of champion.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think that's interesting. I think it's going to make that next fight more interesting whenever we get to see Bisping back. I don't know. Obviously, like you said, Whitaker's got the issue with the knee at this point. So, I mean, it was a fun night, fun fight to cap things off. I think it was soured, obviously, quite a bit by the fact that the main event was gone. And let's be honest about this UFC 213 card. This UFC 213 card wasn't lighting the world on fire before that main event was gone. Especially for a fight week card.
In its current
international
form.
Fight week.
In its current
international
form.
International fight week.
Yes, in its current form. But remember, at one point it had Donald Cerrone on it with Robbie Lawler, and at one point it had Cody Garbrandt on it, right? Like, there were some fights to kind of get it to the international fight week moniker.
Yeah, but there was no Brock.
While I agree there was no Brock, I just don't know that we can get him on every card
year.
He is cleared.
But he peed hot, but then you wait a year. You just make sure that card's always a week after the card before.
So eventually, we'll end up in August, which will overrun SummerSlam, which will be the problem.
International Fight Week, December 16th
yes.
of 2024. Would you care if you saw Brock every year?
No, I don't care.
Exactly.
And I sort of love the fact that we would just get him to test slightly less hot just to get him back in the octagon.
I just like that we just run the UFC around whatever USADA rules there are,
yes.
How long you got to sit out.
We're the podcast version of Belco is what we are.
That's what we do.
That is what we do. The other fight I want to talk about, because I just want to get your take on the Olenek fight. Does Travis Brown retire at this point?
Oh, that was weird. That was a weird submission.
And five in a row at this point, I believe, right?
I don't know. He should go home and have Ronda's babies.
He really should do that, but I believe five.
Eric was taking a drink at that point.
Really think five in a row means that you should probably hang it up in the UFC.
Did he threaten to kill himself after? I'm sorry,
he did not.
I'm not.
The other thing I want to say about UFC 213, and then I want to move. I want to move on because this is clearly falling all over itself. I want to shout out to Cody Stamen from originally from West Michigan and Muskegon, who made his UFC debut and was successful in said debut, took the fight on short notice and wins in his very first UFC fight at International Fight Week, which means we currently have three, if not four, fighters from West Michigan who are actually making some noise in the UFC.
That's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, so exciting stuff. So congrats to Cody.
Quick, while we're on 213, is there anything more boring than an Alistair Overeem decision win?
Nope, there really isn't. There's nothing more boring than Alistair Overeem in the word decision.
Oh, my God. I mean, you don't ever pay that dude. You never really pay heavyweights for decision wins. But Alistair Overeem in a decision win, how was he less impressive than Curtis Blaydes? How does that happen on a fight card?
Yes. How does that happen?
Eric's got nothing. He's like, yeah, that's
well,
true.
I mean, I don't know. Like you said, it was the worst of the worst. And one of the things that, you know, we don't necessarily on the show get wrapped up in the every fight needs to end in a finish. Not at all. Because to be honest with you, I thought the Jim Miller Pettis fight was a lot of fun, and I thought it was going to be, and those guys delivered. However, when you have a night that everyone's already disappointed because it's not the thing that they bought, and all these guys run it to decision, it's really hard to get fired up for the whole card. And then when Alistair Overeem doesn't deliver on his Overeemness, I get it.
No, that's what you pay the guy for. Oh, you pay the guy for all the needles in his ass and all the horse meat and all that stuff.
You do.
And he comes out and decisions somebody, and you're like, oh, God, it's like 1 a.m. and like this terrible card without a main event is still happening. what is going on?
This headless horseman is running around my
exactly.
my living room and will not leave. The other news,
like,
that
can somebody run out in a polar bear jacket?
The other news that broke today.
Light
well,
this thing up.
Two things that broke today. The first I want to get to is one I was hoping was not actually true. There was talk on Tuesday that we were getting an Ultimate Fighter season headlined by the amazing Justin Gaethje and Eddie Alvarez. And then it was said that Eddie Alvarez wasn't going to take it, and it was going to be headlined, or coached, I should say, by Justin Gaethje and Kevin Lee, both of which I thought were terrible ideas. Turned out we settled on one of those terrible ideas, and we've got Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje coaching a season of The Ultimate Fighter that's already being recorded as we speak.
Don't care. Don't care at all.
This is You're what I'm saying. So on Twitter,
anything from me.
I had a couple people.
Like, if here's the thing about The Ultimate Fighter.
Sure.
Before you get to Twitter.
I'm going.
I would be pissed if Kevin Lee were on The Ultimate Fighter. I feel like that's just like this weird no man's land of you can't fight for freaking 12 months almost half the time. You got to record the season. You sort of have to train. The guy who you're fighting might or might not be healthy. I don't know. Just stop.
Well, and,
stop.
And that,
I'm
so
glad Kevin Lee's not on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yes. I'm also glad because he's as you said, you've got some momentum and you don't want to derail that for a half a year. The other side of that, and no disrespect to Kevin Lee, but the other side of that is you're trying to make a TV show. And the problem with making a TV show with a guy who's had a single main event appearance and a guy who's had a single fight in the UFC is no one would care about that.
Hmm. No. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I guess if you're going to do the Kevin Lee thing, maybe you bring the fight he just had against the choke that wasn't a choke and the
oh with
you forgot too.
You've got me blanking for no reason. Doesn't matter.
Chiesa.
Mike Chiesa. Yeah, there you go.
Yes, maybe you sort of do that, but I don't think you can run a whole like TV show on that, can you really?
Well, 16. This is what I'm saying. And so I was saying earlier this week that I thought the Alvarez Gaethje thing was terrible because you put Gaethje on the shelf when people are just paying attention. Because lo and behold, and I said this on Saturday night when the Nunes fight was canceled, put that as the main event. People paid $60 to see the free fight you had the night before between Michael Johnson and Justin Gaethje because that was incredible. Now, I don't know how
but
long.
Nobody cares about those guys, and I get how incredible that fight was, and everybody kept saying how incredible it was. And I'll be honest, I didn't get to watch the night of, and I still haven't had a chance to watch, despite how many people have said it's amazing.
Well,
you know why? Because there's a buy-in factor that just isn't there yet with those guys.
And so this was my point, is right, like, you don't want to take this kid out of it because lots of people are talking about him. He had an amazing performance, probably one of the fights of the year because both guys wanted to engage. Michael Johnson, even though he lost, he was taking it to the kid. I don't know how many fights Gaethje has because he's going to get his head taken off because that's just the style of fights. But you want that guy. I want that guy back in the octagon in September. I don't want him on a stupid TV show till January. And I got people on Twitter who are like, hey, man, did you see any of the Gaethje fights before UFC? He was the face of World Series of Fighting. Yep, I get it. No one watches World Series of Fighting. He's a UFC fighter now, so people are paying attention to him. So you want him to be in the octagon, not on a channel that 60% of cable users don't actually have. That's not what you do when you build a star. Tell me about all of the seasons they did with Conor McGregor building The Ultimate Fighter.
Exactly. Exactly. You want to see the guy fighting. And again, that's ridiculous. That's like what, you know, I don't mean to bring in WWE again, but I mean, that's the same kind of thing you see sometimes with some of these people that are on Raw or SmackDown Live.
Did you see what he did in NXT? What about his Ring of Honor stuff? That was superb.
I don't care. What's he doing now? What's going on now? And why would you stunt a guy who's had a huge fight by putting him on this damn show? This nobody watch. What are the ratings? Seriously, of this show?
I don't know what the ratings are. I'll look them up in a second. But more context.
You don't have to look them up. Nobody cares.
Well, more context to add on top of this thing to rewind back 50 minutes. Your champ at 155 is currently embroiled in the biggest fight in actual history. Actual recorded history, the guy is doing that. So your champ isn't available right now. So when you have a guy who seemingly for most people, like you were just alluding to, who don't watch World Series of Fighting, because no one watches World Series of Fighting, when this guy shows up out of nowhere and takes it to the number five guy in the lightweight division in Michael Johnson, and crushes him in the second round when neither dude had juice left to go to a third round. You want that guy back in the octagon.
Like, quick.
Right. You want him fighting?
Months later,
no.
Not nine
you want Gaethje fighting? You want
people.
Lee fighting? You want Nurmagomedov fighting? You want Ferguson fighting? You want one of the four of those guys should be fighting right now. And putting this guy on with Eddie Alvarez, who no one cares about. No one cares about right now. Mm-hmm. On an Ultimate Fighter series on Fox Sports 1. Come on now.
There's also, it takes a special breed of fighter to transition into coaching. And you don't know if the guys that are great at fighting can actually transition into coaching. And forcing this guy to do it basically on the air, on your TV show, while he's trying to get his own career going, I don't think that's very fair. Cool, you're going to give Eddie Alvarez a shot because he was a little underwhelming and he didn't do quite as spectacularly as you thought he would. I get that. But to put this other guy on who's just now showing glimmers of fighting of fighting prowess on the air in the actual UFC. Oh, wait, now you got to go coach a team of Goombas here and teach them how to fight in this and that and the other thing and bring your own. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on somebody who's just trying to get their footing in the UFC.
Well, and, you know, an undefeated
fighter. This made me one of the most ridiculous coaches I've seen on this show.
An undefeated fighter who won his UFC debut in a spectacular fashion, who probably, like I said, has at least the fight of the year, if not rounds of the year. You're shelving him so that, as you said, he can go coach. Now, I know, Ken, you didn't watch the fight, so I want you to go watch it this weekend because I think you'll find it to be spectacular. However, one of Justin Gaethje's superpowers is to be hit with a Mack truck in the head and shake it off. That is not something you coach.
No.
You cannot put people in a parking lot in Las Vegas and hit them with trucks and hope they will learn to take punches in the jaw the way that Gaethje does, because no one can do that.
To be fair, I would watch that on FS1 before I would watch most episodes of The Ultimate Fighter. I told you this past season, the only episodes I was really interested in when guys could choke each other. You start driving trucks at people, I might be in. I'll hit that little reminder on the DVR.
All right. And then the last thing I want to end this week's show on is that your boy Max Holloway just tweeted out while we were on the air a poster for UFC 217 that seems to have him versus Frankie Edgar for the welterweight championship and Garbrandt and Dillashaw for the bantamweight championship on the poster.
Interesting.
So November 4th, Saturday, UFC 217, according to Max Holloway, it has not been confirmed by anybody else, although the art on the poster looks just as terrible as the rest of the art that the UFC has put out this year. So
you're believing it entirely.
So I'm all in because it hasn't been made in Adobe Spark, which would be better than what
when
the UFC.
When did you become such a design freak at this point?
Well, I just feel like there should be brand standards and somebody should be reading them. That's all.
Dana's very busy jetting around the world with Leonard Ellerbe right now.
The thing about running an organization, Ken, is you don't have to do it all. You can actually hire people that can do that for you.
That's
actually one of the things he might learn from Ellerbe, is that you can hire people to do a lot of the stuff that you need to get done.
He does hire a lot of people.
He does.
I mean, how many levels removed were we just to get on a plane?
Exactly. He hires a lot of people. And, you know, the one thing that he's not doing is he's not designing posters. Ellerbe's not setting up a ring or selling hot dogs. He hires people to do that.
Boy that did your logo?
Who did my? Nick Bailing?
Yep. Quick shout out, Nick Bailing?
Yeah.
I got to call him. I need some stuff done.
Reach out to Nick Bailing. He can help you with whatever this poster is because I'm pretty sure you could make it in Adobe Spark. That's all.
All right.
All right. As always, you can follow along on Twitter and Facebook. Search WOW Show. I am Eric Holkren. That is Ken Evans. You can follow him on Twitter at the Ken Evans. And I am at Eric Holkren. Have a wonderful week. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show this time around, brought to you by the friends at Barstool Sports.